This is The Guardian.
Hello and welcome to The Guardian Football Weekly. The biggest night in recent memory for Rangers ruined by a Ramsey penalty miss. Will they look back on this as an opportunity wasted or an amazing achievement to get this far? And what about Frankfurt? Five of the best penalties you'll see in a shootout. Was this a result of Oliver Glasner micromanaging his players better than Van Bronckhorst, or did they just wallop them into the corner? Quite a bad 90 minutes, a torrid period of extra time, but how big is this for Frankfurt? Will now be in pot one for the Champions League group stages next season. Elsewhere, Liverpool's second-string side of total nobodies beats Southampton to ensure the Premier League will be decided on the final day. Plus, Nottingham Forest rely on penalties and goalkeeping heroics to progress to the Championship playoff final. There's a Premier League preview, emails about teeth, your questions, and that's today's Guardian Football Weekly. On the panel today, Barry Glendenning, welcome.
Hello, Max.
Hello, Katie Shanahan.
Hi, Max.
And joining us for part one, live from Seville Airport, Archie Rintup. Welcome, Archie.
Hi, Max.
Sounding a little bit quieter than you did on the television last night, Archie. Live from Glasgow, Colin McMillan, who joined us last time and spoke so well about Rangers getting to the Europa League final. Sadly, one step too far. Hey, Colin, how are you doing?
Hi, Max. Yeah, I would say I'm good, but I'm not. But yeah.
Yeah. Well, let's start with you, Colin. I mean, commiserations, mate. How? I have experienced losing penalty shootouts as an England fan, amongst others. How was that for you?
It wasn't great. I'll be honest, it's penalty shootouts, we've not got a massive amount of experience in. We've obviously got to the match final in Manchester in 2008, beating Fiorentina on penalties. But other than that, we've not had a lot of high-profile penalty shootouts. Certainly nothing like that last night. And it wasn't very enjoyable. I understand what it's like for you guys at international tournaments now, because that was not enjoyable at all. It wasn't a great game of football. I think we played quite within ourselves at times. I think the occasion maybe got to some of the players, and I don't think we realised just how technically good Frankfurt were on the night. I thought they played very well, and they stopped us playing a lot. But I'm proud of the team. I'm proud of what we did. I'm proud that we got there. And I think in a couple of days' time, when I've got a chance to process it properly, that will be the overwhelming feeling of pride and real pride at these players for doing what they did and getting to there. Because like I said, when I was on a couple of weeks ago, these tournaments aren't set up for teams like Rangers to get to finals. It's not expected. It shouldn't happen. And the fact that the club did so well and made us dream and made us think for a time last night that we were actually going to win is a massive, massive thing.
Colin, this is going to sound harsh when I say this, but like, I know what it's like to be gallant loser. And, you know, Barry knows what it's like when England lost in the final of the Euros and in the semi-final of the World Cup. And the difficulty is it's almost once in a generation, not quite, but that's the thing, is it to be that close and that close to pot one in the Champions League and all the money and all of that. It's just so difficult.
It's massively difficult, yeah, especially because we did a preview show on our podcast this week where every single podder predicted Rangers to win. That was the mindset we were all in. We were all confident. We all thought we were going to do it. We thought this was our best of our chance to lift a tournament, lift a trophy like this. So that makes it even harder. The fact that we got through the 120 minutes, the fact that we were leading at one point as well, and then to lose it on penalties, it is grasped, just taken from your grasp at the last minute, and it is hard to take. It's a tough one.
Meanwhile, Archie, we were working together last night, and you're not a Frankfurt fan, but you were kicking every ball for them, weren't you?
It's difficult not to when I know so many Frankfurt fans, and what this means in the wider context for German football, to not want this Frankfurt side to get over the line because of what I've spoken about with you before, of what this means for fan ownership, 50+1, and how important that it is. So yes, I was happy when they won, as I think you saw, but also it's difficult not to feel sorry for Rangers and their fans who in the second half in particular, they upped their game. In the first half, I thought they were outsung a bit by the Frankfurt fans. But once they scored, that atmosphere in on the left-hand side of the stadium was unbelievable. And yeah, I think the moment that will really stick in the throat for Rangers fans was 2 minutes from the end of extra time when Ryan Kent has that chance. But he met a man who felt he had a date with destiny in Kevin Trapp, who has been putting in heroic performance after heroic performance for Eintracht Frankfurt this season. He had a dark moment a few years ago when away at Barcelona, he was on the end of that comeback from them in a Paris Saint-Germain shirt. And now he came back to Frankfurt. He lost in the Europa League semi-finals on penalties to Chelsea in 2019. And then he comes up trumps against Aaron Ramsey. The guy is going to have a statue of him at some point in Frankfurt. I'm pretty confident of that much. And it's going to be a pretty good looking statue as well, let's be honest. The guy has already been on the front of Men's Health magazine in Germany. But here's the thing. I read that article because it was in my hairdresser's, full disclosure. In that article, not once was Eintracht Frankfurt mentioned. Eintracht Frankfurt has not been sexy enough to be mentioned in the same breath as Kevin Trapp. But results like this, evenings like this, that will change now. There is recognition for Eintracht Frankfurt on the European stage, and it shows you how big an achievement it is. They're going to be playing against Liverpool or Real Madrid in August, as if all of this Champions League stuff wasn't enough.
Before Max mentions it, can I just point out that he has also been on the cover of Men's Health?
Although, to be fair,
in what
Barry,
capacity?
Well, it was the six-pack in 6 week challenge. Me, Dan Walker, Chris Kamara, Ben Shepherd. I mean, it wasn't Ben Shepherd already had one, but I did it. And I did look like I had some sort of degenerative disease. I mean, all six were there, but I was basically wasting away. If you want one, and I don't want one ever again, replace everything you like eating with one cashew nut, and then you'll be fine. When you mentioned that Ryan Kent chance, Colin's eyes glazed over in that way that we discussed Mikel Arteta's, just looking into the distance, thinking, oh, and Katie, that was such a big moment in that match, wasn't it?
It was such a huge moment. And I really feel for everyone in the stadium at that time, because we knew, we were like, look, he's 5 yards out. He's got to put it in. But fair play to him for actually charging the length of the pitch and getting in the right position in that late, late stage of the game. But ultimately, that would have won it for them, really. But I've got to come back to a point that Archie was making about Aaron Ramsey's miss, because I really feel for him. He's only been on the pitch for 3 minutes. He barely played. We've seen this happen before, and I'm just surprised that we haven't learned from it. Euros final, same happened with Rashford, Saka and Sancho. Also same as happened with Mark Noble. Remember when he came on as a sub against Manchester United and also missed? Whereas Frankfurt, I noticed that they brought on two subs, but they both had 15 minutes and 20 minutes for the match, and they took the first and second penalty and both scored. So I think it's really unfair for Aaron Ramsey to kind of be put in that situation, I personally think. And I don't think it's fair for a player. Yes, they may have put their hands up and they've gone through the list and they know what's going to happen in the penalty shootout. But for a game of that magnitude, he mentally wouldn't have been in the same place as the rest of the players that are already at that level. They're fully warmed up. They're ready to go. And it's really going to affect Ramsey's confidence going forward. I can't imagine what he was thinking when he went to bed last night, and to think he might actually have to do it again in the coming months if Wales take either Scotland or Ukraine to penalties in the World Cup playoff final, he might be put in that position again. So I really went to bed thinking for Aaron Ramsey last night. He's on loan at Rangers, and it's just devastating for him, and it's a hard one to come back from.
Yeah, as our mate Ellis James tweeted, I'd love to know why Ramsey hasn't come on. He's made for games like this. That is a that hasn't aged well, Ellis. Barry, what did you make of the whole affair? I mean, the atmosphere was great, wasn't it? I know that we'll talk about some of the fans' misbehaviour. Generally, the fan behaviour is pretty good. Fans together enjoying themselves. It was sort of what you want the Europa League final to be, really.
Yeah, I must confess, I was surprised by how
well behaved most of the fans seem to be. I did see one clip of what looked like Frankfurt fans attacking Rangers fans, and there was sort of posturing and a bit of half-hearted chair throwing, and that seemed to be about the size of it. Colin sent a wonderful picture to the WhatsApp group of the most sunburnt man I've ever seen. My thoughts and prayers are with him, because that kid is not going to be able to walk today. God.
I've experienced bad sunburn on the legs. And let me tell you, his legs, even through to December, are going to be looking like candy sticks, if my experience is anything to go by. That guy, I shudder thinking about... It's a level of pink that I didn't think was possible.
No. Actually, Andy Brassel was on doing the show with us. He said he thought he was wearing salmon chinos when he sent the photo. Colin, what was the from your mates who did make it out there and did get tickets? What did they say about the trip?
They all seem to have loved it. I think they all struggled quite a bit with the 35 degree heat. I'm not to the extent of the aforementioned salmon legged man, but they thoroughly enjoyed it. I think they really loved the city, beautiful city, really good atmosphere, apart from one little incident quite late on Tuesday night with some Frankfurt fans. It does seem to have passed without incident. A little bit of complaints, I think, last night at the stadium. I think there were some issues last night with kiosks and getting water for people last night, which was a pretty poor show, given it's a showcase stadium, that sort of heat. People were being given plastic cups and just told to go to the bathrooms and fill them up at one point, which isn't ideal. But other than that, no, the guys have had a great time. I think the extra time, the penalties caused a few issues with some late transport for guys getting home last night. Two of the boys missed their bus to get back to Faro and ended up getting an Uber. But that's just part and parcel of these nights, isn't it? And what you do to get home. So,
now, just going back to the question you asked me, I got slightly sidetracked. I mean, it wasn't a very good game, was it? But picked up in extra time, I suppose, the Ryan Kent opportunity. Brilliant save by Trapp. And yeah, I mean, Katie says she feels sorry for Aaron Ramsey. I kind of think that's why you're there, Aaron. You're on the big bucks, and you should have scored that. And I know Ellis will not hear a bad word said about Aaron Ramsey, a man he loves more than any other human being in the world, including his partner Issy and his children. But you got to be scoring that, Aaron.
But I mean, isn't that the point of penalty? You know, Roberto Baggio missed in the, you know, like good players miss penalties.
Yeah.
That sort of.
Well, I don't think he's, you know, it happens, players miss, but I think a man of his experience and talent should be scoring. So I don't particularly feel sorry for him, but yeah.
I think he should have been given a bit more game time, say 10 minutes, a bit more time than 3 minutes, I think does make a big difference towards the end of the game. You can just fully get a bit more warmed up. And that's what happened with the Frankfurt players. They had 15, 20 minutes and they both scored. So had he been given a bit more time, would he have put it in? I suppose we won't know.
I was just quite interested to see what you guys thought of Calvin Bassey last night.
Oh, my God.
Because he's a guy who has improved so much over the last 18 months. And we move him from left back to centre back. And no matter where you put him, he does tremendous. The duels that he won last night, his recovery pace just gets better and better and better. And obviously a big thing of last night is us not qualifying for the Champions League and not getting that windfall. But I've got a feeling after last night we might get that windfall in the form of somebody coming in and buying Calvin Bassey, sadly.
I thought, like, a bit like that Leicester player from a couple of years ago, Vasilevsky. He looked like you didn't have enough players and you just got a rugby player to fill in. And then as the game went on, I was like, God, this guy's good. And you're right, when he did that Cruyff turn and he slipped and he managed in extra time when everybody was knackered. I mean, everybody there was knackered. The crowd, you know, like this guy, Delphi writes, you know, has there been anything more severe than the beer dip felt by Rangers fans at that European final in the second half extra time? But everyone was knackered. I thought Bassey's recovery for that was so good. And also, Colin, it's worth mentioning Alan McGregor, who had a really good game as well. And, you know, what, he's the third oldest player to ever play in a European final, I think, after Dino Zoff and Edwin van der Sar.
Yeah, I think that was, what, his 103rd European appearance for us last night. And that's probably his last match. I don't think he'll play again for Rangers now. I think he'll go in the summer, and we'll probably go with John McLaughlin in the cup final at the weekend. So it was written in the stars, really, for him to get a penalty save last night and win it for us. But sadly, football's not written in stars and it didn't happen. But yeah, but massive shout to Alan McGregor for what he's done for this club over the last 20 years.
And what next for Rangers?
Got to pick ourselves up and we've got to go to Hampden on Saturday and beat Hearts and pick up the Scottish Cup, which is going to be a massively different day to what it was at 60 minutes last night. It's going to be difficult for the players, it's going to be difficult for the fans, but the best way to bounce back from something like this is by picking up a silver thing and pointing it at the fans. And hopefully that's what we do on Saturday. I was going to say we end the season on a high. It won't be a high after last night, but it'll be a start to getting back to a high and it'll cheer the fans up a little bit. It's been a long time since we won a domestic cup and we're due one. So that's what we do first, because that's what this club's all about, is winning, picking yourselves up and winning something else. And hopefully that starts on Saturday.
Meanwhile, Archie, for Frankfurt, you know, pot one in the Champions League. Trophy won, and first one what since 1972 in Europe, and pot one in the Champions League. All that money, it's sort of game changing for them, is it?
It is. First, they've got to do a lot of celebrating, though. I got a whiff of that in the press conference last night when they all came in and soaked Kevin Trapp and Oliver Glasner in beer, and you sadly smelt it for the rest of the press conference because they absolutely hammered the ceiling with it. So that was unpleasant, but they will all go back now to the City Hall in Frankfurt, the Römer, where they had to actually move 9 weddings that were scheduled there, and they invited all those people involved in the weddings to celebrate with them if they won. So that will go ahead, but yeah, hundreds of thousands of people will be pouring out in Frankfurt to celebrate what their president's called the greatest night in their history. Interestingly enough, Max, he said to the players to motivate them, a European Cup win is 1,000 times better than sex because this trophy, it's only there to win very, very, what's the opposite of often?
Rarely.
Rarely. That's the word. Rarely. Yeah. And Kevin Trapp commented on this being like, I'm not sure if this statement about the cup is being better than sex is correct. The cup is great and sex is too. So
it's the ultimate, why can't we just enjoy both? It's what he's saying. Katie, I don't know how you generally feel about the Europa League. And I thought it was, in a sense, it was great that it wasn't two sides that had dropped down from the Champions League. But like, we can be quite sniffy about it, you know, Thursday night, that kind of stuff. Can't be bothered to watch football on a Thursday. And I just wonder if, you know, looking at that atmosphere and what it meant to both sets of fans, you know, and looking at sort of how glum Colin currently is and what it meant to him, that we should actually sort of reappraise how we feel about the competition.
I think it was a really good night and a massive night in Rangers' 150-year history. Their successful run in this Europa League campaign has certainly not only shone a light on Rangers and Scottish football, but also, like you say, Max, the competition. And with also Scotland about to face Ukraine in their World Cup playoff semi-final, I think it's a really, really good time for Scottish football at the moment. I know, obviously, they didn't go on to win it, but it was certainly a togetherness and the coverage, you know, and the build-up of all of yesterday. It was on all of the TV stations, radio stations. And I really felt as though there was a unity towards Scottish football and them trying to go and do it last night. But I think it's just a fantastic journey that Rangers have been on, bearing in mind they went into liquidation, 10 years ago, and then they reached the Europa League final. I think, yes, sometimes we can be snooty towards the competition, like we've seen with Arsenal potentially gifting Tottenham top four, and it's like, oh, Arsenal going to get Europa League Thursday, Sunday. How's that going to affect the schedule? And also it's interesting hearing managers say how different it is playing on a Thursday and a Sunday, even though, you know, Wednesday and Saturday isn't too much difference. They talk about, you know, the build up and how everything's just about out of sync. But ultimately, I think last night was a great advert for the competition. And I also want to speak about Giovanni van Bronckhorst. I think he's done an unbelievable job this season, and it's not easy replacing Steven Gerrard after he guided them to the league title for the first time in 10 years. All of them will be hurting, especially Giovanni van Bronckhorst as a former Rangers player himself. Great manager, and it looked so calm throughout the whole of last night, I thought, on such a historic night. But yeah, I thought it was a great advert for Scottish football and also the competition. So I'm actually looking forward to it more next season, especially after last night.
Colin, did you feel a sense of unity from sort of Scottish football, sort of Celtic aside? I mean, Gav said, not so much a question, I feel it should be pointed out on the pod tomorrow, that the majority of Scottish football fans are delighted with that result. So generally, how did you sense it?
It's a difficult one in this country. We're a bit of a basket case for a place, aren't we? There was actually quite a few sensible Celtic fans that got in touch with me yesterday, some friends and some people I know that actually did wish us well and did want us to win, but I would say the vast majority didn't. I am to give you the best indicator of what this is all about, at full time last night, I was sat with my mate Jack and my dad in my house, absolutely gutted, and the house across the street started setting off fireworks. So we can talk about unity, we can talk about what's good for Scottish football, we can talk about all being in for European success, but the reality of it is green fireworks at 11 o'clock at night.
I mean, yeah. I didn't expect Celtic fans to want you to win, but I just wondered if, you know, Aberdeen or Stranraer or St Mirren or Falkirk fans would want you to win or would care either way.
There's so few of them to ask. I don't know. I think they certainly did. I think over the last couple of years, especially the runs that we've had on these first nights in this competition, has done wonders for the coefficient. And Hearts, for example, are going to massively benefit from that because they're now just one qualifying round away from the group stages of Europa next season. So I think the sensible ones do appreciate what's happened from a coefficient point of view and they'll enjoy the benefits of it. Whether they would actually enjoy the joy of Rangers winning it, that's debatable. But I think if you look at the bigger picture, then they've got to see the benefit of potentially two Scottish clubs in the Champions League, the exposure that gives to the competition, to the country and to the players we can attract and stuff like that. But there is still a lot of work to be done before we're all on the one dim sheet.
Lorraine Kelly wanted everyone in Scotland to support Rangers, if I remember a question that we had in, right?
Yes, Paul said, do you think Lorraine Kelly's tweet saying everyone from Scotland should get behind Rangers will end sectarianism?
Didn't Boris Johnson do a special message for Rangers in a state of affairs which suggests he will now also have to do one for Liverpool, which I'm sure will go down very well on Merseyside?
He spoke with all the confidence of a man that's never watched a game of football in his life when he spoke about it, but yeah, it didn't help.
Can I ask Archie a couple of things? One about the heat, because I think that does affect football matches more than we'd perhaps consider. And two about, you know, the atmosphere, because we did see some scenes, as Barry said, you know, people chucking garden furniture around, that sort of hooligan element of Frankfurt we've talked about before. Let's start with the heat and move on to that one.
So, yes, as you can see by my skin, I'm a little bit worse for wear, and I was wearing Factor 50 throughout yesterday. But, you know, it was oppressively hot. And you could feel it in how flat the Frankfurt fans were on the street after as well. They were just so knackered from the whole occasion. And I saw Frankfurt fans who were bathing in some of the fountains at their fan meet. A lot of topless Rangers fans in particular as well. So, yeah, it was difficult to deal with. And you felt it with the intensity of the game as well. I think that there's a reason partly why both sides were not going for it in the same way that they might have done in slightly less, in slightly cooler temperatures, for example. The fans. Everything I saw, Max, from my experiences in the hostel and from what I saw on the streets, were two sets of fans who had a lot of respect for each other, high-fiving each other in the street, wishing each other the best, drinking with each other. And it's a shame that this hooligan element of the Frankfurt support, who don't even go to games, like they're there for trouble, from what I know, that they're the ones who are making headlines. But I think there needs to be a much greater emphasis placed on, I think, the friendship and the way that both sets of fans behave towards each other. And to be honest, that for me is football. That is how the majority of the time it does go down between fans. I met a Frankfurt fan who was a little bit hungover. I'd say he was in his 50s in my hostel. the next morning and he'd been out. He was like, oh, I was out till three last night. Those Rangers fans, they know how to drink. Oh my God. So like, it's those memories I'll take away. And also outside the stadium last night, there was a Rangers fan who was looking up at the stadium outside and thinking, yeah, well, you could tell what he's thinking, like, why wasn't it our night? And he saw two Frankfurt fans come over to him or come over in his direction. And he just went up to them and was like, oh, guys, congratulations. Do you want a photo of you two outside the stadium? It's like, it's these small little bits of humanity that, you know, that's not going to make a headline, is it? Because one person is nice to another person. That doesn't qualify as news. But there were many moments of kindness that I heard of as well, aside from that. And I think that that's where I'd want to highlight from my experience of what I saw in Seville.
Perfect. Archie, we'll let you get your flight. Thank you, mate.
Thank you.
And Colin, commiserations again. Thanks so much for coming on. We really appreciate your time.
Yeah, thanks. A pleasure, Max. Cheers, folks.
Colin McMillan there from the Heart and Hand podcast. Archie, we're in touch. And we'll be back. Me, Katie and Baz will be back with part two, where we'll talk about Liverpool's win at Southampton.
I'm Grace Dent, and I am back for third helpings of comfort eating from The Guardian. Join me and more celebrity guests like Big Zoo, James May, and Self-Esteem as we throw the cupboard doors wide open on the comfort foods that have seen them through.
This is a niche sexual thing for people. Northern women eating carbohydrates.
Comfort Eating returns on the 17th of May with new episodes released every Tuesday. Comfort Eating with Grace Dent is supported by Ocado.
Welcome to part two of the Guardian Football Weekly. Buy tickets to see us, please, for the live show, especially if you're in Birmingham. Hayden says, hello, Max and co. Listener from the southeastern US here with some confusion about recent emails from other Americans inquiring on when you will all make your American tour debut. I'm beginning to think these people are not actually listening to the podcast because you've repeatedly mentioned difficulty selling out the Birmingham date. It's certainly an interesting destination choice on your part, but I'm very much looking forward to seeing you all in Alabama next month. Yeah, we will be there. Don't you worry. Monday the 13th of June, me, Baz, Wilson, John Bruin. Birmingham on the 15th, me, Baz, Jordan, Jarrett, Bryan and John Bruin. Manchester on the 19th of June, Lars Sivertsen and Philippe Auclair. I believe both Dublin dates with me, Baz, Lars and Mark Langdon are sold out. Then the Hackney Empire on the 8th of July with Troy Townsend, Jonathan Wilson, Nicky Bandini, me and Baz. The 9th of July with me, Baz, Ellis James, Barney Ronay, Sid Lowe. And then in Glasgow on the 13th, Philippe Auclair and Jonathan Wilson. Go to my Twitter or go to myticket.co.uk. Let's go to St Mary's. Southampton 1, Liverpool 2. Jürgen Klopp made 9 changes, Katie, for this game. He said being able to rotate these players was like having Ferraris in the garage. Were you surprised that he made that many changes?
I thought it was quite a risk, yeah, to make 9 changes from the FA Cup final. And he said that this team might not have the same rhythm, which I can understand, but he wanted to maintain the intensity of the high press, which gave an insight into how much he demands from his players, but also the intensity he wants to continue, but also just put on a show as to the squad depth that Liverpool have compared to, you know, other teams in the league. So testament to him and hat tip to Klopp, because he's managing to keep this whole squad in peak condition throughout the season. So fair play.
Do you think there's any part of him that's kind of thinking basically the league's gone and it's all about the Champions League final?
I think so. And ultimately, you've got to rest Salah, Mane, Virgil van Dijk and Alexander-Arnold. It's the end of the season. I was at Arsenal yesterday and they've got a number of hamstring injuries and it's just fatigue towards the end of the season. I bet the players are just desperate to have a bit of a break. It feels as though we're watching Premier League games every night at the moment. So I think ultimately you'd rather rest them for a game against Southampton than one of them pick up a knock and then they can't play in the Champions League final. So I think it was a big call. 9 was probably more than I was expecting, maybe 6 I would expect. But yeah, a big call, but fair play, it worked and, you know, they got the win they deserved.
Barry, do we want to have the is Minamino a good player conversation again? More goals and assists than Jack Grealish this season.
Is that a fact? Right, I didn't know that.
Neither did I. Producer Joel put it in. So, let me know. If it's wrong, it's not my fault.
Yeah, well, I suppose Jack Grealish hasn't had a particularly good season, but he has played quite a bit more often than Minamino. He's a good player. We know that. There aren't too many bad players in the Liverpool squad. Even the fringe players are good, as they proved the other night. I think you're quite right in your assessment that Jurgen Klopp probably thinks the league is a busted flush, but I reckon quite a few of the players he left out would have wanted to play. Mo Salah will have wanted to play that game. He wanted to score goals because the race for the golden boot between him and Heung-min Son is so tight. I think there's only a goal in it. It was a job done by Liverpool. They were completely in control throughout.
Producer Joel has written in red, all competitions in parentheses before anyone comes for him. Joel Matip with possibly the slowest header of all time. And Tsimikas, interestingly, the first Greek to set up a goal at Southampton in Premier League history. I don't know if that's true, but I'm just hoping Socrates did it before. Decent finish from Nathan Redmond, took a deflection. I just wonder if that's what Pep was, when Pep yelled at him about 3 years ago, maybe that's, you know, when he took him after the game and just started really yelling at Nathan Redmond, saying, what are you doing? Why are you doing that, Pep? Maybe it was the saying, in 3 years, you might be able to do me a favour. Barney Ronay wrote a piece about James Milner, saying that here he played in front of the defence, occupied the centre ground, passed the ball forward. A player's gone from part-time false nine in his Man City days to the footballing equivalent of the muddy pair of wellies Klopp keeps in the boot of his car for moments like these. In the first half alone, he completed 97% of his 54 passes, had two shots at goal, made four interceptions. He never at any stage looked like a man losing a football match.
So is Barney saying he's not so much a Ferrari in the garage as a muddy pair of Wellington boots in the boot of the Ferrari in the garage.
Yeah, it takes Firmino out, who is the Ferrari, opens the boot, and there's James Milner sitting in it. But, you know, you need those wellies, don't you, Katie?
Yeah, you absolutely do. And he's such a fantastic player for Liverpool Football Club. He's always there when you need him. He comes on, and you always know what you're going to get as well, you know, those muddy welly boots maybe. But I just want to make a quick point about Minamino, because I thought it was an important goal to settle the nervy start. I thought it was a good finish too. And I also don't know about you guys, but I think that, I don't know, he never celebrates when he scores. It's always so composed. And I used to play hockey for England, and I used to absolutely go bonkers whenever a goal went in and charge to the...
Hang on a second. Did we know this, Barry? Did you know this?
I knew this, yes.
Yeah.
Keita used to play hockey for England and had to retire because of a serious head injury.
Yes, well done, Barry.
Right.
Yeah.
How can you not know this, Max?
I don't know.
It's like basic due diligence.
I just don't know. You know, Sean Curley and who was the other
James
one who scored
Sixsmith.
In?
Sixsmith.
And who was the guy who came on for short corners? Callum Giles? And my hockey knowledge is not amazing, right? Who else scored in Seoul 88? Not Enoch Shawumny. He was a centre forward who played for Luton. Oh, I forget now. It's absolutely bugging me. So my apologies, Katie. Anyway, you were saying when you scored for England, what, did you go completely wild or were you as cool as Minamino?
I was definitely not as cool as Minamino, but just to let you know. So I played 5 years for England hockey and then had to retire due to a big head injury. So that's my little bit. But yeah, so when I used to score, I used to play striker for England and just used to charge to the nearest person next to me. So I used to completely get wrapped up in the whole kind of celebration. But Minamino, it just seems so composed together, like nothing's happened.
Well, I think, Katie, that might, is it because he was on loan at Southampton, so it was like a non-celebration celebration out of respect.
I've seen him do it before. I've never seen him go nuts after a goal.
Do we think not celebrating at a club that took you on loan just for a little bit, just to fill a gap, is acceptable behaviour? Or should he have gone absolutely wild? And more importantly, Katie, how long does it take to perfect getting good at hitting it with the reverse stick? Because that's when I really said, come on, this basically, right? Hockey was the one bloke at the back who had golf lessons would hit it as hard as he could, and then it would just hit other people's sticks and occasionally go in.
That is the hardest skill, Max. So you basically have to get really, really low, and loads of people scuff it and it goes in the air. And actually, that's how my accident happened. A girl was on the reverse and just scuffed the ball, and it hit the blade side of the stick and flew in between my eyebrows. And obviously a hockey ball is harder than a cricket ball. Smashed in between my eyebrows. I collapsed, dropped to the floor, lift my head, and blood was pouring out my head like a tap. Everyone screamed, ran away, which was really helpful. And I was rushed to hospital and had to have plastic surgery all around my head to stitch up what was an extremely deep wound, and then had to have spinal reconstruction for 6 months and effectively put all of my spine back together because the impact was so hard it knocked all my spine out.
So are you all right now?
And then had concussion for ages, couldn't go to work. And unfortunately, I've never picked up a hockey stick since, and I was playing for England and everything. So after all of that trauma, literally, I think it was a couple of years later, it was the FA v some of the members of the media. Someone was booting up from a goal kick, and it was going so high in the air. And I remember everyone was like, header it, header it. And I was like, no way am I heading this ball after what I've experienced in my career. And I chest it and it just flew, and everyone just gave me absolute shit for it.
Without wanting to sort of delve, you know, sort of turn this into the psychologist's couch, how did you find sort of, you know, not being able to pursue your dream and focus on something difficult, and how difficult has that journey been?
It has been hard. I think watching the girls win gold in Rio, because I was part of the Rio development squad, so that was kind of the journey I was kind of on. But ultimately, at the same time, I was also just kind of on the career with media, and I was working at Chelsea and I was really enjoying that. So I think when it happened, I kind of came to terms with it. And also, it's like a car accident. I would have gone back into the game, and with hockey, you really have to commit. You have to. And I was a striker, which dived all over the pitch. I'd be that last kind of deflected shot into the top corner. And you really have to put your body on the line. And I remember my players, because I played in the Premiership. I won the Premiership. I went to the Euros, got loads of medals for England, travelled the world, went and played, got a scholarship in America for North Carolina, and also was paid to play on Australia. So I've certainly had, I thought, right, I've had a great career. I can look back on it with fond memories. I'm now pursuing a career in media, and the accident happened. And I think if I'd gone back to it straight away, I would have potentially continued, but I left it too long. And even now, I think if I went back and played, I'd get flashbacks like you would in a car accident. And I think with hockey, you need to fully commit if you're going to go back.
And do you, and less importantly, you know, given what we saw yesterday with the penalty shootout, would you favour the hockey style penalty shootout, the one they had in MLS about 30 years ago? You know, you have a one-on-one.
I think the one-on-one, because you've also got a timer, so you've got to do it within a certain time. So that adds jeopardy to the situation as well. I think I prefer that because anything can happen. And I think, like we saw in the, you know, when GB won gold in Rio, the drama that unfolded that night. I think I would like to see football potentially take that back. That would be quite cool.
I was in Rio for those Olympics, and I had to cover the fucking biathlon. No, it was the modern pentathlon. And the hockey final was on about, I don't know, 100 metres away in an adjacent stadium, and I could hear the noise. And it sounded like the greatest sporting event of all time. And I was stuck watching this shite that I had to report on for some reason. I was raging.
Anyway, we should probably just go back to the script. Does anybody see Steven Gerrard doing Liverpool a favour? I mean, in narrative terms, it would be pretty special, Baz, wouldn't it? Man City on 90 points, Liverpool on 89. So really, if Villa hold Man City, then you never know, right?
It is not inconceivable that Aston Villa could draw with or beat Manchester City. It's possible. And Liverpool have to cling to that hope that Villa will do them. It's unlikely, but it is a live possibility.
There'd be something sort of incredible about it. Meanwhile, we Barry and I have discussed this, but Katie, do you give Arsenal any hope? Tottenham 2 points ahead. They go to Norwich, so really they need to lose to Norwich. Every Spurs fan thinks this is entirely plausible. What do you think?
Well, it'd be unbelievably Spursy if they do manage to do that. I've been to Norwich for the past couple of weeks, and they're unbelievably optimistic, bearing in mind they know their fate. They've got nothing to play for. So I think it's highly, highly unlikely. And I think Arsenal are heading for Europa League. I think that's...
I love the idea that Norwich are optimistic because no one told them, really. they are relegated. There's nothing they can do. There are games tonight in the fight to stay up. Burnley go to Villa. Everton hosts Crystal Palace. Chelsea play Leicester in a game that doesn't really mean much. So I guess, Baz, like, Everton can, if they beat Palace tonight, they are in the Premier League next season. Is that a foregone conclusion?
I would be surprised if they get relegated at this stage, and they've had a big fright this season, and I'm looking forward to seeing how Frank Lampard does next season. I suspect he won't do particularly well, but we shall see.
Yeah, you see, I don't think it's cut and dry that they beat Palace tonight, Katie.
I think there's a lot on the line. I can see what you mean. Yeah, I don't know. Crystal Palace, they've been brilliant this season, haven't they? Patrick Vieira brought a fantastic style of football to Palace. But I think it's going to be a really tough game. But they know that if they win that, then they've secured safety, haven't they? Frank Lampard, I think, has shown really good character with the players. He's never given up. He's pushed them all away. And I remember speaking to him after Crystal Palace in the FA Cup, after they got knocked out, and he was absolutely devastated and obviously spoke about that after and kind of lay it on thick for what the players need to do going forwards. And they've really shown that. They pushed all the way, but I think they're going to have to put in a big, big performance because, yeah, it's not going to be easy against Palace.
So if Burnley win, then it's in their hands. If they lose, then it's in Leeds' hands. They go to Brentford Leeds on Sunday. Everton go to Arsenal if they're still in the mix. And Burnley host Newcastle. That'll do for part two. Part three, we'll speak about Nottingham Forest getting through to the playoff final and any other business too. Welcome to part three of the Guardian Football Weekly. So Nottingham Forest will play Huddersfield in the playoff final. They lost to Sheffield United on the night. It went to penalties. They won 3-2 on penalties. Bryce Samba, their hero, made some brilliant saves during this match. But, I mean, it was a brilliant game, this, Barry. It was sort of like basketball. By the end, extra time, it was just like chance at one end, chance at the other. And you know, there were just so many moments where you were like, oh. There were sort of so many, like, Gazza and Euro 96 moments for both teams, I thought. Like, just sort of couldn't keep up.
Yeah, very entertaining. Bryce Samba had the game of his life. And his save from Gibbs White at the end with his he stuck out a left foot, did a sort of star jump. That was very like the Ryan Kent miss for Rangers. I have to say, and I don't particularly have skin in the game, but I really would like to see Nottingham Forest back in the Premier League, and I'm glad they won this. But it was a very brave performance by Sheffield United, I thought.
I thought it was a fantastic game, and I've covered Nottingham Forest a lot this season, and I'm the same as Barry. I'd love to see them in the Premier League. I think Steve Cooper's done a great job, you know, taking them from the bottom of the Championship when they only had 4 points from 8 games to now knocking on the door of the Premier League, first return in 23 years. And Steve Cooper, he's very humble. He doesn't like the spotlight on him at all, but actually a lot of this season's been down to him. He always says it's a team effort and praises the fans a lot. And the atmosphere at the City Ground is one of the best in the country. They've made it a fortress. It's great for the fans. But I'll tell you what, guys, it's absolute nightmare for post-match interviews. It's so loud because the fans are bouncing on their chairs singing, "I just can't get enough." You can't hear anything. The players can't hear you. You can't hear the players. And it's going out on national television. And you're both looking at each other like, what on earth is going on? But yeah, they've made it a fortress. It's a fantastic story for Forest. Big fan base, excellent manager, exciting young talents too. You know, it'd be interesting to see what happens to Brennan Johnson and Jed Spence. And also, yeah, a man for the big occasion, Bryce Samba in the final. He's definitely going to live up to the occasion. And, you know, if Huddersfield Forest goes to penalty, then you'd really think that he would thrive off that energy at Wembley.
We do have to talk about the assault on Billy Sharp. Police have arrested a man after Sharp was headbutted at the end of the game. The footage is actually pretty shocking, isn't it? Because not that a headbutt is nice when someone's expecting it, but it just comes out of nowhere. Billy Sharp said, "One mindless idiot ruined what was an unbelievable night of football. Congratulations to Nottingham Forest on their victory. Good luck in the final. As an ex-Forest player, I will not let one scumbag ruin my respect for the Forest fans. Incredibly proud to captain this group of Sheffield United players. They gave their all, can hold their heads up high." The FA said, "We're aware of a very serious incident that took place. We'll be investigating it as a matter of urgency. We'll be working alongside the clubs and relevant authorities to ensure appropriate steps are taken." Nottinghamshire Police said a 31-year-old has been arrested on suspicion of assault in connection with this incident. He remains in custody, will be questioned by officers. And actually, Katie, you know, I am very, whether I should be or not, pro happy pitch invasions, right? I've been in them. They're really fun. They're nice. At no point have I wanted to run up and, you know, go near an opposition player. I don't really necessarily want to go up to my own players. I'm just excited because Cambridge United have won something that matters, which is very rare. And, you know, the commentators always say you don't want to say scenes like this, but I do want to see scenes like that. But perhaps I can't have that, you know, like it's one of those one person's made a mistake, so you all have to stay in after school type thing.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I love a pitch invasion. I've got caught up in two in the last couple of weeks. Forest Green, when they won the League Two title, was pretty tame. There was also no trophy, which didn't help. But Exeter City, I remember going down for the post-match interviews and got, well, first of all, absolutely soaked with champagne. They saw the Sky Sports mic and absolutely went for me. But then towards the end of the post-match interview, the police started shouting at me and they were like, "Katie, we can't hold them much longer." And I turn around and they are literally holding thousands of fans because they're about to charge straight into the stands. And I remember finishing the interview and then they were just like, "You've got to run." And then I just charged to my car and I no sign of the cameraman. We didn't even say goodbye. It was all very chaotic. And I remember seeing a clip after the Forest Sheffield United game. I don't know if you guys saw this, of the linesman literally running. There must have been about a minute before the final whistle and he just charged towards the tunnel. So I feel as though because of what's happened recently, there is a sense maybe for the players, the refs and even broadcasters that things can get out of hand and you need to just get to safety quite quickly. So as much as we all love pitch invasions, I've loved being part of them. There is that element of let's make sure this doesn't go too far as well.
Can you sanitize it, you know, without the sort of organic beauty of it, if that's the right word, Baz, where you say, listen, you can invade the pitch, but let the opposition get off, let the officials get off, and then the pitch is all yours.
But that kind of defeats the whole purpose of having a pitch invasion, you know, if you have to
that's carefully choreographed
at a certain
time. It's just an invitation, isn't it, then, really? Yeah.
It's more of a garden party than a pitch invasion.
It is, yeah, bring sandwiches. Anyway, hope Billy Sharp is all right. He's a good bloke, and it was pretty disgusting what happened. And finally, Chris Stapps writes, "Morning Podders, I just wanted to write to confirm that if you get your teeth knocked out and put them back in, they can, brackets, will take root and you'll be fine. When I was 13 years old, I suffered an embarrassingly bad injury while messing around before a football training session, and my four front teeth were knocked out. This being America and I being middle class, I was of course wearing dental braces, which in this case kept my teeth from being lost or swallowed. I was rushed to the dentist, who put the teeth back in place, refitted the braces. Everything turned out fine, and my teeth continue to be healthy today. Unfortunately, I also broke a kneecap in the incident." Poor, that's a bad. "Before the game, blimey. Which effectively ended my football career and meant I never had the chance to go on to become a big, ugly centre-back at some terrible MLS club." Thank you very much, Chris Stapps. And this is from Louis, who says, "Hello. On the subject of broken teeth, I was on the receiving end of an angry elbow at indoor pickup football in 2009 in Kodiak City on Kodiak Island in Alaska. The gentleman had had enough of me getting the ball off him as I was a sprightly quick 22-year-old and hit me with enough force to snap one of my front teeth in half. Luckily, we played with a doctor who told me to stick it in my coat pocket and then milk when I got home. I continued to play and proceeded to defend the elbow thrower into oblivion and used every chance I could to volley the ball at him as he did not apologise. Once home, it hurt like hell. It hurt constantly. It hurt to drink anything, hurt to eat. It just hurt. This happened to me on a Thursday. My dentist told me they couldn't do anything until Monday. So my tooth sat in a cup of milk in the fridge until then. and I went to my reporting job at the local newspaper on Friday and shocked everybody with my new smile. Anyway, since the pod crew was wondering if that would hurt, it indeed hurts and can lead to more dental work years later. Great times, broken tooth and all. Keep up the good work. Louis Livingston Garcia. Thanks, Louis. I would have stopped playing, Barry. I don't know about you.
Oh, absolutely. I would have gone... yeah.
I don't know.
I'd you just are... quit like Katie.
yeah, you're a quitter, Katie. Anyway, that'll do for today's pod. Thank you very much, Barry.
You're very welcome.
Thank you, Katie.
Thank you.
If you are looking for another Guardian podcast to listen to, and who isn't, Comfort Eating with Grace Dent returned this week for its third season. Celebrity guests will throw the cupboard doors wide open on the comfort foods that have seen them through their lives. Guests include James May, Big Zoo, Self Esteem, and many more. I know who one of those people is. Wherever you get your podcasts. And it's going live for the first time, 25th of May, 7 p.m. in Islington. Special guest is entrepreneur, podcaster, TV personality Jamie Lang, best known from his time as a regular on Made in Chelsea.
Well, no, I'm just thinking, you didn't know about Katie's previous as an elite athlete, and you don't know any, or you only know one of those Grace Dent guests. It's almost like living on the other side of the world, Max. You're losing touch.
Oh no, am I not part of
the I know all
anymore?
Those people. I know who all those people are, and I knew
fuck
about
off,
Katie's
do you?
Previous.
Do you know who Self Esteem is?
She's a singer. A very good one.
Big Zoo?
Is a TV presenter and YouTube influencer.
Wow. Finger on the pulse, Barry.
Mm. James May is Jeremy Clarkson's buddy, isn't he?
Yeah. That was the one I knew. That's a sad, isn't it? Well, listen, you know, we bring different things to this podcast, Barry. I'm the one that keeps it on the straight and narrow. You're the one with his finger on the pulse of popular culture. long may it continue. Book your tickets, by the way, for that show at gigsandtours.com. Football Weekly was produced by Joel Grove. Our executive producer is Max Sanderson.
This is The Guardian.